Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, no matter where on the globe you are. It's the Paul Richard Price Show with your host, Paul Richard Price. Today, I'm going to be talking about a subject, and I have two guests who are going to be, I'm going to interview, who were good friends with the late Gordon Novell, who passed away yesterday after a series of complications due to diabetes. And Gordon was a notorious man in conspiratorial history. Gordon is originally from, or was originally from, pardon the expression, I'm still trying to get over the fact that he's no longer with us. Gordon was originally from New Orleans, Louisiana. And he has been very much connected with the key players of the Kennedy assassination, Dave Ferrian and Jack Ruby and the rest of them. He was close personal friends with Lee Harvey Oswald. It was rumored that Gordon Novell was the infamous umbrella man during the JFK assassination, who helped direct the shots that eventually killed John F. Kennedy. I had known him for a while because of his work with the RAM project, which would have hopefully, had he not passed, could have opened it up to where any gravity and free energy devices would have been used by us all. RAM was called Replication Alien Machine. It later turned to Gravionics Incorporated. Gordon had connections within the intelligence community. Colonel John B. Alexander, the man who's known in circles, in UFO circles, as a member of a UFO group called the Aviary, he was good friends with Gordon Novell, and he also was the inventor of the non-lethal weapons program that the military is now currently using to develop non-lethal weapons technology. That's John Alexander. Other connections of Gordon's is Ron Pandolfi from the Central Intelligence Agency, Dr. Pandolfi, Dr. Hal Putoff, the founder of the remote viewing program, Victoria Alexander, John Alexander's wife, and many others. He's also noted for his work on trying to free the hostages in 1979, which led him to years imprisonment in Iran, which led him to a year's imprisonment in a Iranian prison. Later on, he worked on the Waco incident. He was the one who released a FLIR video that showed that ATF agents and military had shot into the Branch Davidian compound and killed several people in cold blood. He later worked on investigative work on 9/11. He was a private investigator. And also, going back to the 1960s, he also was the primary investigator for Jim Garrison's investigation into the JFK assassination. And he's the one who actually botched the investigation for Garrison. He passed away yesterday after a long bout with an illness that he had had. He had complications due to his diabetes. It is my concerted opinion that certain entities took advantage of that to finally silence him for good. It has moved his son, sir, and his two daughters to set up a memorial for Gordon, a man with a really unique past, was the son of a famous burlesque entertainer, the illegitimate son, and his mother was a famous burlesque dancer. He later became an electronics countermeasures officer. It was rumored that he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency, even though he on one side would deny it, on the other side he would say yes. So you never knew about Gordon. He was a man of many, many different colors. He'd been working so hard on getting the RAM group going and getting this alien reproduction vehicle technology out into the public domain that he claimed that it made him a target for certain government agencies that did not want this technology out there in the public domain. Not only technology or government agencies, but also technological groups and corporations that would not benefit, and it would be counterintuitive for them to financially for them to release the technology because it would end the need for fossil fuels. Now, the issue with Gordon Novell is he was an interesting character. He could have done many things, you know, with his life, but he, in a lot of ways, was a larger-than-life character. And I think, in my opinion, he liked it that way. He liked being the center of attention. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and add Kerry Cassidy to our discussion. And as you know, Kerry Cassidy had interviewed Gordon Novell for Project Camelot. And Kerry, are you currently on the line right now?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, and I'm about to send you the email that Sir Hassan actually sent everybody regarding Gordon passing away. Now, I don't know what happened. He didn't really specify it. I know that Gordon was having issues with his health. And then, reportedly, he was doing better.
Right.
But then he abruptly passed away. A friend of mine, Tom Sullivan, who knows Gordon, who was the VP of RAM Gravionics, told me he thought Gordon may have passed away because of a heart attack due to what he had been experiencing, the illness.
I see. Well, I'm very saddened because, you know, he had a lot of dreams. Contrary to what a lot of people thought about him, I really believe that he had a very good heart, and that he really wanted to do good for humanity. He seemed to be working since the time I knew him, which, albeit was after he had perhaps taken part in some rather unsavory things in his life, etc. It seemed to me that he was working very hard to sort of turn that around. And so it saddens me that he's now not able to continue his work, because I know that he had huge dreams for the future.
And even you and I both know, you know, that I was directly involved with RAM Gravionics myself.
Yes.
Gordon tapped me for my knowledge in anti-gravity physics. I had done a paper, and I've also... you want to explain to people who Gordon Novell was in kind of a brief synopsis, if you would, Gary? I'll let you go ahead.
Oh, well... I can only say that he was most notorious for his possible role in the Kennedy assassination and the Nixon White House. He was responsible for, in fact, walking up the Nixon White House and taping. He later, I mean, these works was before. Before I did my interview with him, my interview became his calling card, as a matter of fact, and I was told many times that it was shown all over the halls of the CIA, as well as in other agencies. People did get kind of a huge kick out of it, because there's a lot of sort of back and forth bantering. People may or may not know that Gordon had a handler who was there at the time, who was monitoring Gordon and what Gordon said, and also consulting Gordon on what he should and shouldn't say during my interview. People will have to understand that also the interview was sent to the CIA for vetting. Now, the interesting thing about vetting, of course, in that kind of circumstance is if they tell you to take something out, then you know for sure that it's true. So they actually are in a catch-22 when they try to do something like that. And basically, they did not do so. They did not tell me to take anything out, and I did not take anything out of that interview. So what you see is what you get. Gordon was he was actually quite brilliant. I don't know if people realize that, but he had a brilliant mind. And he was working towards the end of his life on creating a free energy, what he called, based on the ARV. I just had Mark McCandlish on my show, who designed the ARV, at least the design on paper. It was based on an alien, they called it an alien reproduction vehicle. And that became sort of the prototype of what Gordon wanted to build, in some ways a duplicate of what had already been built, well, first by the visiting ETs and secondly by the space program. But Gordon wanted to bring this into the public arena. That was his baby, and that was his dream. He wanted to bring free energy to the entire planet, albeit he was willing to work with the CIA to do so, which in many people's eyes would make him a less than honorable character. But in the current situation, people that try to even talk about or work in the areas of free energy are often shut down, and this continues to happen around the globe. And Gordon, I guess you might say, was a pragmatist, but he also was somebody who had big dreams. And I believe that he fully and completely believed in his dreams. And people have to understand that when the CIA uses somebody like that, they do so with full knowledge that the being themselves is fully engaged in believing in whatever it is. And what happens with the dark side of an agency, such as the CIA, is they use that to their advantage. And so Gordon was putting together a huge team to bring this, as I say, free energy and you know, UFO technology, so to speak, to the public. He was he got very close to funding, and he had, I believe he had towards the end, he had Stephen Greer on board, as a matter of fact, who was helping to fund his efforts and others. He was initially working with Hal Pudoff, who's quite a well-known scientist and well-regarded scientist. I don't know. I heard that fell through. But at any rate, I think he was also encouraged to work with Jack Sarfati, who's quite a notorious physicist. Many people will know his name. He was working. His very close friend was Ron Pandolfi, who was head of, at least for a time, was head of the CIA so-called weird desk, having to do with UFOs and things of this nature. What Ron Pandolfi's current title is, I don't know. Once you're in the CIA, you're always in the CIA. So I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever that Ron Pandolfi is still a fully engaged CIA member and employee, whatever you want to call that. But what I also noticed about the relationship is that Gordon would reach a certain level of success, and then he would be knocked back down. I would liken him to Sisyphus, the myth about I think it's Sisyphus anyway, who rolls the boulder up the mountain only to be pushed back down again, right when he gets to the top. So that was in essence Gordon's kind of fate. And I don't think he realized that he was being used constantly as a patsy. I told him to his face. We had many discussions off the record through the years. And he was a very strong-willed individual. He talked very sort of, I don't know what you'd call that. He was sort of coarse in his use of language and his, he acted like a tough guy, like from the movies, like from a 1940s movie. But some of that was bluster, in my opinion, although I have no doubt that he would back up with the real thing if he was in a position to do so, and probably did on occasion.
Well, let me tell you, he had a grand use of colorful metaphors, to say the very least. I mean, that guy, and some of the diatribe he had between him and Jack Sarfati is classic. Oh my goodness.
Yes. So that's what I would say. I'm going to take a short break here and let you continue. I will be right back, but I need to post this on my website so I can let people know. And also I will let them know that we're here on the radio talking about him.
Okay, go right ahead, Carrie. And one thing I was going to tell everybody, he was a notorious character. That guy, you know, he had a way with the ladies. I'll have to admit that. He was a consummate ladies' man. His kids really didn't know him that well, which is not a bad thing. They didn't know him that well. But he, as it turns out, had a good heart in some aspects, you know, wanted to help people. But it turned out that with people like Ron Pandolfi and many others, the issue is that it actually caused Gordon a lot more it was more problematic for Gordon than what it was an asset to him, because they were stopping him using whatever means necessary. And whether or not you believe in the ARF, the alien reproduction vehicle or not, or if you want to call it an alien reproduction vehicle, you might want to consider that even if we had that technology, which I do believe we currently do, and it was built here in Terra Firma on Earth, it showed a quantum leap, bottom line, in what our capabilities what we were able to do even at the time when that thing was built back in 1956 originally, from what I understand. And since then, they further advanced it. If you want to think about the TR-3B Black Manta program, that's a further refined advancement on the ARF concept. And that's it. And that is reportedly an anti-gravity drone that they use to you know, to photograph certain areas of the world, and nobody questions it. They think it's a UFO when it's actually something made here on Earth. Gordon tried to get that technology out because he thought that it would benefit mankind. It has benefited the military because it gives them point-to-point transport capability. Bud Rich, the former head of the Lockheed Skunk Works before he died, mentioned that we had a way to get to the stars. We have warp drive and other capabilities, but it would take an act of God for them to release the classifications needed to get that technology out into the public domain. Gordon and his flamboyance tried to get it done. When Carrie comes back, I'm going to ask her, in effect, what her belief is. Gordon always stated that if anything were to happen to him, he believed that he would be murdered. And there's always that possibility that Gordon Novell was, let's say that his handlers in the CIA decided that he was no longer of any use, so they poisoned him. He had blood poisoning before he died, but he actually overcame that. They put him in a forced chemically induced coma to help his body heal, and it seemed like he was doing well. And then all of a sudden, abruptly, the man dies. His son won't even go into detail or to explain what happened. And I'm wondering if his handler, Ron Pandolfi, might know more than what anyone knows, or even John Alexander or the rest of the aviary. One might ponder, but I hate to tell you this, I don't think we will ever really know. But Gordon was a brilliant but tortured man, a tortured soul. He was the son of a vaudevillian burlesque dancer. His father was Billy Rose, the famous musician. And he never knew, you know, he had a hard life. Granted that he overcame a lot of it. However, throughout his hard life, and he was somewhat had some sides of that showed a potential towards where he had no conscience. He did what he was told, and he just did it what he was ordered to do. I'll put it that way. I'm trying to, you know, not speak ill of the man. But along with us right now is Jerry Pippin, and we are discussing the life and times of the notorious but interesting individual named Gordon Novell. And Jerry, thank you again for joining the show today.
It's a pleasure being here. Unfortunately, it's a sad situation. I know you've been talking about Gordon Novell, and we've known him for a long time, and he was a rascal in many ways, but a delightful individual in many other ways. And the world will not be the same, for sure, without Gordon Novell.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, could you tell my audience today about your recollections of Gordon? And a little bit of a brief history. I tried to get Carrie to chime in, and she was quite emotional about the situation, and I understand that. Gordon was very close to her, as he was with you and I both. I've known Gordon going on nearly nine years now. I mean, he stayed over at my house quite a few times. Let's just say he's an interesting character. First of all, before we get into the history, do you think that they might have killed him?
I don't know. There have been several of us that have had mysterious illnesses develop, including Gordon. That's jumping to a big conclusion, but it's certainly possible. He was 74, and he did live a pretty exciting but difficult life. It was tough on him physically. So it's a little hard to say. I heard a little bit of your monologue a while ago, just before I came on. As you know, I've had some strange illnesses pop up here in the last year, but I can't prove anything. I mean, we're getting old, and that's all I can say. So my mind is open about that, but I'd like to remember Gordon today on this show in a way that maybe some people didn't know him. And you mentioned you've known him at least 8 years. I've known him about the same length of time, maybe a little longer. And I thought it was interesting that you did bring up the fact about the vaudeville dancer and the history of show business and Gordon's family. And Gordon went to a place that I always wanted to go to, and to be an actor and a director, and that was the Pasadena Playhouse. Back when Gordon and I were young, the Pasadena Playhouse was the place you went if you wanted to be an actor, especially if you wanted to be a film actor in Hollywood. And Gordon actually made it there. I never made it there. I did go out to Hollywood and try my luck at acting and some mixed success, but not very, very much. And I was in love with broadcasting, so it wasn't a big blow to me that I wasn't the silver screen star. Gordon had a lifelong love with movies. And anybody that knew him knew, and they've heard, you can hear interviews that Kerry Cassidy's done with him and I've done with him. They're all archived. He has a flair for the dramatic, has a flair for the theatrical. He never really got over that. But he's probably most known as private investigator. And he had a checkered career there as well. And we can talk about that if you want to in a little bit. But the first time I met Gordon in person, I'd been corresponding with him for a couple of years before that, was in Laughlin, Nevada. We all decided to meet in Laughlin, Gordon Novell, Jim Mars, and myself. And we were getting together to figure out what we wanted to do about 9/11 as far as a broadcast as series, which is still going on the Jerry Pippin Show, as a matter of fact. And Kerry Cassidy's done some great work in that area, and along with Bill Ryan and others. And so the first time I met Gordon, I was interested in several things, and the impressions that I can bring back to me was he was wired. By that, I mean that in two ways. First of all, he was a very nervous individual. He had a lot of energy, and he was wired in that way, but he was wired literally. He had, when people really weren't walking around with cell phones and other, he had a BlackBerry, and but he's one of the first ones I ever knew that had a BlackBerry. And he was constantly on that thing, talking to people, back and forth, had an earplug in. While we were having breakfast, I remember we had Jim Mars and a movie producer who I unfortunately can't remember who it was, because this was a meeting back in 2006 or 7, maybe 2005 in Laughlin. We were there at the time. It was the Flamingo Hotel, and we were down having breakfast, and Gordon shows up late. Jim and I were there, and this movie person and Roberta Scott from our staff, who does our location producing. And Gordon came in, and we started talking, and most of the time he was busy. Even in a conversation in which we were talking about business, he was busy on his BlackBerry talking to other people. And he liked to drop names of people in the CIA and other places, and he loved the people at the CIA. And even though he told me more than once that he never worked for the CIA, now he was a kind of a third party contractor, and he more or less worked out of the White House. But he was quite an individual from those standpoints, and I remember the first thing that I remember about him, besides being wiry and wired, is the fact that he wasn't a big man. He was shorter than me, and he, no doubt, he could take care of himself physically, no doubt about that. And he was quite a ladies' man, even though Gordon was not necessarily a good-looking fellow. But he had some charm about him, and we all know that there's a little little bit of all of us that are infatuated by people who have lived a little clandestine life. So that's my memories of Gordon Novell the first time I met him. I remember one time in Roswell, you and Gordon came by our booth, and we were talking as well. And that was about the same time frame, maybe a year later. It gets confusing as we go through life here, and I keep talking to people about the time frames. But Gordon always was available to talk, and Gordon had some interesting stories to tell, and I had some interesting experiences with him.
Well, my initial meeting with Gordon Novell started with Ron Pandolfi, an email I sent to him regarding getting funding for anti-gravity research, so he directed me to Gordon Novell. And I'm going, okay, I know who Gordon is. He was the Umbrella Man. I remembered that. And he also was the guy who turned on, reportedly, Jim Garrison during his investigation into the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, we did several interviews with Gordon about that Jim Garrison thing. He was very candid about it. For some reason, Gordon didn't care for Jim Garrison. And I would talk to other people who were involved, and they didn't seem to care for Gordon. And so I guess there's a mutual dislike there. But Gordon befriended Jim Garrison, came in, worked undercover, and reported everything back to the White House, according to what Gordon told me. Paris Lamond, who was the producer for Long John Neville, was down there in New Orleans at the same time. And he thought Gordon was all lip and no go. And that was part of Gordon's persona, you know. That's part of his personality. And at the same time, it was something that Gordon was quite proud of, really. And that some of these unsavory characters, that he considered them an unsavory way, he basically delighted in the fact that they didn't like him. It's kind of like a burr under the saddle, as they say in the old Western movies. And it was a role he enjoyed playing, and I can certainly understand that, because that's the best way to really get down to the nitty-gritty of a story, is you make the other person lose their cool a little bit, and then they start saying things and talking about things that they wouldn't do. And Gordon was a master at investigating like that. I used to think I was pretty good at it, but he was a lot better. And one of our favorite tricks of both of us is to call people early in the morning. You call somebody about 4:30 in the morning, and they answer the phone. This is before you really had caller ID and people could ignore you. But you call them up about 4:30 in the morning with some amazing fact, like why did you kill John Doe? You'd be surprised at some of the answers you get. And so you get your recording going, and that's the way you, you know, but the bigger they are, the people I'm talking about you're investigating, the harder they fall. And Gordon knew that very well. He never really confessed to me about the Umbrella Man. He always sidestepped it. What did he ever say to you about that, Paul?
Well, funny. Funny you brought that up. He would initially tell me no, then backtrack. And Gordon was good at that. He always liked to have an air of mystery about him. And he reveled in that kind of persona that he, you know, projected in front of people. By the way, we have Carrie Cassidy back. Hello, Carrie. Carrie, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. How are you?
Hi, Carrie. How are you doing? I know it's been a shock to you.
Yeah. It has actually been a bit of a shock. But anyway, Jerry, it's lovely to talk to you. Obviously, people may or may not know that you and I go way back.
Yeah, we do. We go back even further than Gordon Lemel.
And yes, and for everyone listening, Jerry Pippin is a legend in his own time, and anyone who doesn't know that should further investigate. And
yeah. Thank
you. It's lovely to talk to you and on the radio here, even though it is a sad occasion. I think that you probably knew Gordon pretty well, isn't that right?
Yes, we knew him pretty well and worked with him a lot, but so did you.
Yeah, I would say so. I've just published on my blog the short statement from his son, saying that he'd passed away, and linking to this radio show here, so people could tune in and be aware. And I'm going to try to Facebook and tweet it too on the break. It's very interesting because I guess other than the fact that, you know, I mean, one can look at this philosophically, of course. In my view, it seems that Gordon was extraordinarily healthy initially when I interviewed him. And for his age, he was very young, actually. He looked young and he was extremely vibrant. And so it apparently he took some kind of a real downhill trajectory at a certain point in his health that landed him in the hospital. I'm actually rather surprised because I didn't think that he was in such poor health. And so I'm not I being Camelot, I'm going to see this as that they stepped in and decided to do away with him. Perhaps they decided he was too much of a sort of burr in their saddle, as you called it. He was a very, very sort of cantankerous individual. I was just noticing at the bottom of the email from his son, Sir, that there was someone talking about how he apparently was getting better in the hospital, and then he was complaining and bad-mouthing everyone around him. That would be, Gordon, because he was, I think people don't realize is what happens with somebody like that is that they have very high sort of dreams and aspirations, and they also have a high measuring stick for those around them, and the other people around them often don't live up to that. Now, it doesn't really have to do with whether they themselves live up to it, but I just want to say that, it comes from, that kind of a judgmental, very sort of sarcastic, interesting kind of individual. I think in a certain way that our society, that's kind of a dying breed. I don't know how you feel about that, Jerry, but I like those type of people personally.
Well, I do too. And as I said, they're interesting, and I'm infatuated with those people. And you mentioned, and Paul talked about it earlier, about whether or not Gordon was knocked off, or this is a natural occurrence or whatever. He was 74, but you are right. Until the last year or so, he was very vibrant. And I called him a little earlier wiry, and that's why, by that, I mean he was feisty for his age. And he never really thought of himself as an old guy, and nobody around him. Oh, much of him was an old guy. We had kind of that in common. And the last year or so, he did go downhill, and health-wise. He was in the hospital, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago. Now, time gets away from me. He had a bypass operation, and but he seemed to have recovered from that quite well. And here again, I don't know. You and I have had many people in our past and in our journalism careers that suddenly die. Makes one wonder.
That's right.
And we're in a business that is important to get the truth out, And it's difficult at the same time on I know it is on you. You're quite a caring individual personally. I've always been quite taken with you from the first time we met. And our paths have crossed back and forth, Gary. And basically, I know it takes a toll on you. It does me, and I try to be, act like I'm hard as nails. But when these witnesses suddenly die on you, it makes you wonder. And the problem is, when some sort of biological attack like this, if that happened, you can never really prove anything. And I don't want to try. We're talking about Gordon tonight, but this afternoon. But I've suddenly developed several illnesses, and I've been a very healthy guy. But I look back on it. I just don't know how they could have infected me. So I guess it's natural. So you brought that subject up. And it's something that Gordon even talked about. He joked with me about it several times. I'm sure he did you too. That people were going to knock him off.
Well, yeah. I mean, he would have said, what he would say is that MJ-12 had it in for him and they were going to knock him off. And they actually had him thrown in jail on false pretenses a number of times. People don't maybe know this. It was absolutely incredible. I mean, I have to say what they did to Gordon. Now, some people might say he did it to himself. I don't think so. The evidence is that they did some crazy things. They took his car. They said it was stolen. They made him go. They got him arrested. They sent the cops down to arrest him. Crazy stuff would happen to him constantly. They just loved to harass him, basically, and they knew how angry he got. And, of course, I'm sure that the amount of anger that he was dealing with on a daily basis, it's actually amazing that he was as healthy as he was for as long as he was. But I guess maybe after a while it could have contributed to his, failing health. Although, on the one hand, I mean, I think he would just stay alive just to spite people as long as he possibly could. So it's really my position that they had to have taken him out this time.
Carrie's right about that car incident. That pretty well was his own car, and pretty well. It's kind of like how long have you been beating your wife? You never have an answer, that's satisfactory to people. And these people that Gordon dealt with, that Carrie deals with, and I deal with occasionally, they know how to play that game very well, so they could have very easily caused his demise, no doubt about it. So I'm not going cold water on that at all. I'm just saying we don't know. We don't have any proof, but it's pretty mysterious.
Well, I could also talk about the time when I was in Roswell and a certain handler of Gordon's sprayed me with a toxin that got me sick. 3 days later when Gordon showed up for the Roswell 60th anniversary. And I got sicker than a freaking dog. And I mean, I was sick. But we could get more into that. And I mean, they do play dirty pool. Bottom line.
Well, that's true. And Carrie knows even better than I know that some of these people that have come forward are no longer here. So, I mean,
absolutely.
And I'm not trying to scare whistleblowers away because we need them, but there is a risk.
Well, there is a risk, but there's a risk in just leaving your house every day. I mean, you got to have something to live for. And I do want to say, just in tribute to Gordon, that he definitely had reason to live. And I mean, I have spent hours with the man, and he just goes on and on and on about his plans for the future and his book that was, his company RAM that he had put together, and all the times when he tried to get that thing off the ground. It's just amazing.
By the way, Carrie, I wanted to get into the topic Gordon had a varying, notorious career in his life, as Jerry and I talked about earlier. Gordon denied in one aspect, but then would later on confirm in other aspects that he may have been the umbrella man who helped direct the shooters to take out John F. Kennedy during the Kennedy assassination. He admitted.
Well, I'm not sure that he was working for the shooters.
He may not have been, but he knew David Ferry.
I mean, he was in the middle of all that, and we talked about that a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't know how Kerry feels about it, but Gordon's politics certainly wasn't anti-Kennedy.
No, right.
It is a very interesting subject, and I really was very, very hard to get a straight answer out of Gordon in regard to that issue. If you watch my interview with him, you'll see as I try to go down that road with him and how evasive he was. He was very close-mouthed around the Kennedy assassination. He knew a great deal, and obviously they were monitoring his answers in that particular regard very closely. So you can appreciate that in fact, I'm actually kind of kicking myself here, because had I known that he was going to pass, I would have gone to his hospital and tried to get, some kind of last statement from him. And this is just the kind of thing where they wanted to avoid that very thing. I thought he was getting better. I have to admit, I didn't have any warning that he was going to pass at this juncture. So, unfortunately, I wasn't able to get that last statement. And I think a lot of people out there would have loved to get that last statement from Gordon. It's very possible, being the kind of personality he was, he would have spilled the beans, so to speak. I just don't know. There are people there that are sure that he was involved. He was the umbrella man. I know I have a friend who watched him very closely and definitely thought that he was there. Hold on. I'm just hearing from Rich Dolan. I want to see...
Have Rich Dolan, if you would.
It's interesting. It's interesting that Gordon had unusual names for his children, and Spirit, for instance.
Okay, Rich is here, and he would like to be added. Let me.
While you guys are getting ready to get Rich on, and Richard knew here at the end more about. The condition of Gordon than any of us. In fact, I'm kicking myself now because I started to call Richard yesterday to find out the latest. And since Gordon passed away at 3:00 in the morning in a nursing home, Rich may have known about it already. His son wrote in this email,
Jerry,
and I think I should read this.
Can I interrupt just for a brief second? I need to clarify this with Kerry.
Let me mention the fact that in the email, it's something that Kerry mentioned about Gordon, and I think his son said it pretty well here. Dad would not have wanted to have been lying in the hospital much longer than he was, and so his time had come. And Gordon was not the kind of person that would want to be in a nursing home for the rest of his life. And so we just don't really know exactly what happened there, other than he had this rare disease. That he had diabetes, so maybe a part of it might have been that.
Hold one second, Jerry. Is Richard, are you on the line? Okay, he's on live. Hello, Richard. How you doing?
Hi, Paul. Hi, Kerry.
Hi there.
Yeah. Hi. How are you doing, Richard? Jerry Tippin here.
Hey, how are you, Jerry? Good to see you or hear you.
So this is a very a rather sad occasion, at least from my perspective, Rich. Do you want to share how you knew Gordon? I'm sure people would love to hear.
Yeah, I knew Gordon for, I don't know, about 10 years, I suppose. And first time I met him was at, I think, the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, probably back in 04, 05-ish, maybe 04. And I will never forget one of the organizers of the conference, a young guy came up to me and said, "Rich, be careful. Gordon Novell wants to talk to you." Gordon was preceded by this awe, this fear and awe that this guy had for him. I'll never forget it. But I do remember, you know, that time meeting with Gordon, and he's the kind of guy who would just get right in your face. Gordon never missed words, ever. And I got to know him pretty well. In fact, I ended up participating in a project with him along with Jim Mars for a little while, until just, you know, Gordon could just make you crazy, to be honest with you. He was a lovable guy. I loved him and I hated him at the same time. I told him that. I said, "Of all the people I love, I hate you the most. Of all the people I hate, I love you the most." But the thing about Gordon was he had dedicated himself for a long time to, as he used to call it, white worlding, the black world technology that he knew, that he was convinced was in the hands of the folks at Groom Lake and beyond, all of it based on his analysis and that of other people on the alien reproduction vehicle that was seen allegedly by Brad Sorensen in 1988. Gordon was one of the people who spoke to Brad Sorensen about this. He was convinced that it's real. I'm convinced that it's real. And his mission ever since was to develop that technology, to get it out of the hands of Majestic, as he would often say, and make it available for the rest of the world and really change the world.
Well, yeah, Gordon and I discussed that a lot as well. And he looked at that as a mission.
Yeah.
That this free energy, this new technology, could change the world. And that's the reason I said what I said about him a little earlier, about his politics. Gordon was at the same time a gruff and rough individual, as you say, Richard. You hate him and you love him at the same time. But he really had the goodness of mankind. It was kind of a paradox, you know. He lived a dangerous life, supposedly, and people, his reputation preceded him. And he liked to push that reputation, by the way.
Gordon to me was a lot like my dad, who is still alive, but those two guys have a lot in common. My dad was a cop in New York City and a real tough guy. Gordon was just like that. And once I got to know Gordon, I really was able to relate to him very well on that basis. And what I found is, yes, he was very gruff. He was very in your face. He talked a big game, and you sometimes would wonder, how much could he really support? But here's one thing Gordon really did. He always struck me as almost being able to make bricks without straw. You know, with no infrastructure of his own, he really put together teams of very capable people, very high quality people, to move forward on this mission. And he would prod and prod and prod and push and push and push. To get all of these different people to try to work together for this common goal. And I'm sad that he died before he really could see this to fruition. And may I ask one of you, when and how did he die?
Well, all I know, let me interject here, is that I received an email from, Tom, who's a secondary associate of Gordon. Sam was the VP of Gravionics, and it was from Sir.
Okay, his son.
Indicating that Gordon had passed away, not explaining what happened, but just said that he died. From what I understand, he was dealing with some severe health issues, dealing with his diabetes.
That's right. It was very bad.
And that, but reportedly, he was doing better right before he passed. Which is amazing to me. I mean, I can't understand what happened with that and how Gordon would have just abruptly, Richard, have passed away after doing so much better. I mean, the guy was a fighter.
I'll tell you this. I put Gordon up in a hotel for a few nights. He came up to Rochester to see me for a little while, and I spent a lot of time with him. He for a guy with diabetes, first of all, he was in very good physical shape and condition. However, he had the worst diet. I have a son with diabetes. I know all about it. Gordon lived on donuts and coffee. When I saw him, and I said, Gordon, you can't do this. This is not good. But he just, that's what he did. I mean, he didn't, I always felt that he did not eat well enough for a person in his physical condition. And then he did nearly die a couple of years ago. I know he had very bad health. I was very concerned about that. And yes, he got better. But I don't know how well or poorly he took care of himself in the last year or so. It's quite possible. I don't really know. I mean, whether, you know, if you're suggesting that someone offed him, I don't know. I think that his...
let's really know. You do get better sometimes before you get worse. I have diabetes, but I take care of myself, and Rich is right, Gordon didn't.
No, he was insane. I mean, the guy had more energy. He was manic, honestly, and he just never stopped. I marveled at his determination, at his energy, at his grit. But I really never felt he took good care of himself. And he smoked, you know, smoked cigarettes constantly, and so I don't know. I mean, my guess is that he just died. Of course, I don't know.
Well,
Carrie, what do you think about all of this?
It's so fun because we have three talk show hosts on this call, and then Rich Dolan, who is never short of words.
I have my own show every Saturday night. Just
there you go. So now we've got four talk show hosts on one, and I'm actually inviting Mel Fabregas just in case he wants to join us.
That'd be good if Mel did. He does some good work.
Yeah, I imagine he probably knew Gordon. I'm trying to get the word out as I'm doing the show at the same time. Let me just say that there was at Sir's email, at the bottom of the email, there was a message from a woman who apparently was trying to talk to Gordon and maybe to Sir as well, saying that he seemed to be getting better, and that she was telling him to eat a vegetarian diet and all this kind of thing. I guess they also said, I don't know, I guess if it's there, I'd have to pull it up back up, but I think it said he was basically feeling better, and he was bad mouthing and complaining about the conditions in the hospital. And I just think that's so Gordon. It's just, you know, I have to say that I really believe this man had incredible dreams. He wanted to see them through. I think he would have fought to the last final straw. I have to feel that they pushed. They pushed him over the edge. I don't think he would have wanted to leave at this time. It's just my feeling. But, I have no proof, of course.
Well, let me go ahead and interject something here. You know, I remember I worked with the RAM team for a while. I've done papers on gravity control, and Gordon was an interesting man, a very cantankerous guy. But he had a varied history. He would deny things at one time and then admit them at another, and never had a loss for words, you know, from what I understand, from what I've known of him. He always had an opinion on something or another, and he did not at all feel afraid of expressing that opinion at all to anyone.
Not just an opinion. He really had informed opinions. He was a very well-educated, well-read guy, and he constantly just surprised me with his wide range of knowledge about science and history and law. He was very good friends, of course, as he often said, with former Attorney General Ramsey Clark. Gordon was a guy who was really engaged in the world. And he just never stopped. He was one of these people that I used to say I loved him and hated him, but it was just because he was a genuinely good human being, at least in my experience with him. But he would make me crazy because he was constantly demanding more and more out of me because he had this mission. He wanted things to be done, and he just kept going and going. And
well, let me say, along the lines of his brilliance, and he really was a brilliant man. I don't think people really knew that.
I have to agree.
And he was extremely well read. In fact, I have to tell you that I heard, this is what of course Gordon told me, that he had the biggest and best UFO library, bar none. He was a collector. And I think a lot of people don't know this, and I don't even know where his library is. But this is something to be looked for, and so that it doesn't get lost and doesn't get taken away. I can just see the CIA pulling up in front of his house right now, loading his library and memorabilia into a van. Because the guy, this is what he told me. He said, people don't know this about me. He said, but I've got the best and biggest library, bar none, in the world.
In fact, Terry, can I interject something here?
Sure.
He willed that library to the Roswell UFO Museum upon his death. And I was there when he actually talked to...
All right. Well, let's make sure they get it. Because this is going to be, there will be something in there. I can guarantee you, that's worth knowing about. He had a lot of secret documents. This is another thing. His whole RAM, and Rich, I guess you might have had some exposure to this. It'd be great to bring people like Hal Pudoff on the line. I know these people probably won't talk about what they really know about Gordon or anything. But I have to tell you, he knew people in every walk of life, and he knew where the secrets were buried. I can guarantee you.
It would be interesting to find out where the library is, and I guess some people close to Gordon would know. Gordon was very secretive to me about exactly who he was hanging out with, who he was living with at the time. Sometimes I get a little clue or so, but he, we got to be careful who does get that library. Curry does have a point there. I believe he does have probably some secret material. Maybe Rich has an in on that. We might talk to him about that later. Rich publishes things.
I would just guess it would be in Louisiana, but I don't know. I don't know where that library would be.
Yeah, I don't either.
Well, I know he...
Gary knew him better than many people on that level, personal level, so maybe...
Well,
maybe
I know he...
get a clue.
He had... He lived in Palm Springs towards the end of his life, so I don't know if he was... he had relocated. I mean, Gordon was...
Nail him down about that, whether it was Desert Hot Springs or Palm Springs. Both of them are right by each other,
But he was the sort of man who, he was very unusual in that regard, I have to say. He was not your usual elderly person, but he was by any stretch of anyone's imagination. He was, he was basically a dynamo. The guy never stopped.
He was a true larger-than-life guy. I mean,
yes,
be truly larger than life.
Yes. Yes. And I did my interview with him in black and white, and people will not, they'll not, maybe not know that there was a huge controversy over that. And Gordon stuck by me. And finally, the CIA wanted it back in color. And I said, no, black and white suits him. It's, he was one of those larger than life, like one of those 1940s black and white, like Humphrey Bogart. He was, that was really his type of thing. He was a gentleman to women, really an excellent gentleman when it came to women. And he was always propositioning any woman he saw. and that was just his style. But you know, but he was also very charming, and he had gone out with some top Hollywood stars. I have to say, he'd love me to say this. He'd want me to say this. He once wanted people to know what a womanizer he was, and he was proud of that fact. He was a great admirer of women, which warmed my heart.
Well, how many times, Carrie, did he actually proposition you as well?
I don't know.
But something should be private.
it doesn't matter. I mean, it probably every time I talk.
Yeah, right.
It didn't really matter. It wasn't, there wasn't the point. I wasn't going to take him up on it. But I have to say, he wanted people to know what a sort of gentleman he was, that he'd been, he was very in love with some Hollywood star. I forget her name.
Before we get into the discussion that I'd like to get into regarding what Gordon Novell's legacy will be after his passing, I had a question in the chat room from Stu asking if you had any ideas, any of you, on what his views on Planet X or Nibiru is and on the UFO subject. And Richard, would you like to field that answer?
Yeah, as I recall, I will just state I'm not as sympathetic to that concept as a lot of other people are, but I think Gordon was. I didn't really go into that in a whole lot of detail with Gordon because I think he knew my position on it. But I think he was an admirer and reader of Sitchin's work, and I believe that he gave credit to it. But I want to go on the record for that because I don't want to misquote him, and I might be wrong about it. I will say, I just wanted to jump in with something else that I think is more germane about Gordon's work, which is the whole concept of the whole idea of the ARV, the Alien Reproduction Vehicle. And I missed the discussion that preceded when I got on here, but I think that is the number one piece of importance about Gordon Novell is that he was completely committed to getting this type of technology out there. And he was convinced that at least in 1960 that Black World classified clandestine groups were reproducing flying saucers. There's a 1966 photograph of an object just outside Provo, Utah, for example. And I remember talking with Gordon about that image at length. I think he made a very strong case that this was, in fact, one of ours. And one thing he was very interested in doing was putting together kind of a lineage of certain images of flying saucers through the ages to sort of track this development. So that image from 1966 is very, very close, for example, to the image of the ARV as drawn by Mark McCandlish, as described by Brad Sorensen, and very similar, at least strikingly similar, to another image that Gordon was absolutely fixated on, rightly so, I would say, and that's the 1994 Nellis UFO video, of which leaked out to the TV show Hard Copy in 1995. And I'm sure many people listening may be familiar with this, or if not, you just Google it. But Gordon really saw a direct lineage from the 1966 Provo image to the Sorensen story of 1988, and then to the Nellis image of 1994. And then the other thing I just have to say about Gordon, this is on a personal note, I've never in my life met anyone who dropped more F-bombs per sentence than Gordon Novell. Number one, he gets the cake. I don't know, maybe with women he was different, but oh my God, when I was with this guy one-on-one, he was unreal. I thought my dad was tough, but Gordon's way beyond.
Yeah, Richard, Gordon did have a colorful use of the colorful metaphor, did he not?
Absolutely. He was very strong with language, but as Kerry was pointing out and everyone else is mentioning, he was an extremely intelligent man and, in fact, always had something relevant to say.
Do you mind if I could ask you, Richard, while I have you on, have you here? You've done books dealing with classified documentation from the National Security Apparatus about UFOs.
Right.
Since we're on the subject of the ARV, have you seen any documentation pertaining to the ARV situation in the classified documentation you've been able to review through the FBI?
No, the problem we have with that is that there's two types of documentation. There's officially released documents that you get from National Archives, for example, whether at College Park, Maryland, the U.S. National Archives, one of the presidential libraries, or the archives of some other nation. And those are officially released declassified documents. So that's that. Of those types of documents, no, there is absolutely none that I am aware of that relates to this. It has to be said also that the spigot on those documents really is nearly off. That is, of the thousands of pages of documents we have today on UFOs that are declassified, more than half of them, literally more than 50% of all that we have, were released during the administration of Jimmy Carter, if you can believe it. So that's great for the Jimmy Carter years and really stinks for everyone after that, because FOIA just hasn't been as friendly ever since, and particularly from the mid-1980s onward. So the ARV story, there is no official document that I know of that refers to it. Then you get into the realm of leaked documents and debated documents. For example, the Majestic documents on the website of Ryan and Bob Wood, for instance. But even there, I have never encountered a document dealing with the ARV, like explicitly that. I personally believe there is such a craft. I believe that we've been making these objects for quite some time, but there's nothing in the way of documents that I've found.
Well, and another thing is, I think the overriding legacy that Gordon Nobel will have and will be we'll be seeing this for time in memoriam from this point on, was his tenacious work in getting out there and trying to get the information to the right people to declassify these technologies so they can be used for practical work by, the civilian apparatus. And there's still, that's why I have an issue, and I believe, Richard, that more than likely something may have happened even before he went into the hospital with, when he had his toe amputated. He thought that these people, Richard, and the CIA were his friends, and they were fair weather friends, to say the very least.
Well, yeah, we're talking about Ron Pandolfi in particular, who, I mean, honestly, if I hope Ron Pandolfi listened, Gordon had placed a great deal of hope. This is only back about four years ago, I'm thinking, that through Ron Pandolfi at CIA, that this project, the RAM Gravionics project, would be able to go forward. And if you can ever get Ron Pandolfi to be interviewed, that would be fabulous. But I had the distinct impression that basically I really wondered if Gordon was being played. I wondered this throughout the project. And by the way, if we could get Jim Mars on here today, because I talked a lot with Jim Mars during this whole project.
Rich, you weren't on the show, but I was talking about the relationship between Ron Pandolfi and Gordon. And yes, and no doubt about it. I liken Gordon to Sisyphus, I believe it is, who rolls the boulder up the mountain only to have it sent right down again. Ron Pandolfi would be the one sending it back down again, but also encouraging him at the bottom to continue to roll the boulder. And I see him as a fair weather friend. I don't think so. I actually think there was probably a great deal of affection between the two men.
Yes, I believe that's right.
Yeah, yeah. He talked to me a lot about Ron Pandolfi, and it was an up and down relationship for sure. Ron would do things, or the CIA would do things, and Gordon wouldn't understand them at all, and it seemed to me like they were just a double cross more than anything else. And when 2 days later, he'd be back thinking Ron Pandolfi was the most wonderful guy in the world. So they didn't have a personal relationship, evidently.
Well, I wonder if anyone here knows about Gordon's relationship toward the end to the Rothschilds, because this was really the last path that he was taking, at least that I was able to follow.
And yeah, I don't know anything about that. Tell us about it.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about it, to be honest with you, and I was hoping that someone else here did. But he, for the last year or more, because I did see Gordon. When did I see him? I saw him last, in fact, I believe at Awake and Aware in 2011, if I'm not mistaken. I think about a year ago, I think he popped in, and I chatted with him. And at that time, he was telling me that he was making inroads into one of the Rothschild family members and wanted to get financial backing for his project on that basis.
Tell people, you know, I know about the Rothschild thing. I'd heard about that, actually. And let's see if I can add him again.
I don't know. There's really not a whole lot that I do know about it, which was really why I was asking if anyone here knew. For a few years, I dealt with Gordon a lot, and I'll be perfectly honest with him. I love the man, but he made me crazy.
Okay, hello. We have Jason on the line. Jason, feel free to go ahead and chime in and ask any questions you would like to my esteemed panel of guests here.
All right. Well, yeah, I was just listening. I'm actually a host here on Revolution Radio. And I was filling in for a show, Pamela and David's show. And you guys, if you want to take the server and go on talking about Gordon, that's fine with me. I mean, this is kind of a heavy thing. And if you can get Jim Mars on, that would be great. And
that's so kind of you. That would be great. I think it just seems like the right thing to do to keep the show going for a while so people can call in and share their stories and whatnot. I would really appreciate that. I know that I can tell you that Gordon would, you know, he's probably still here in spirit. You know, you can appreciate that. He didn't want to leave the earth, I have to say, you know, and I have to caution Gordon if he's listening that you know, he has to, you know, if he's gone out of the body, he really has to leave. But I know that he really didn't want to die. I mean, he was too driven. He was a very driven man, and he had a mission, and his mission, as Rich just said, was the ARV program. Was to bring free energy to the world. Whatever you think of Gordon, however annoying or aggravating he could be, and I agree he could be, you know, I mean, I used to have some yelling matches with him. I'll never forget one time I was driving across the desert after one of the conferences, and he called me. It was very late at night, and he was ranting on, as he would do, about MJ-12 and how they were doing this and how they were doing that and how wonderful his project was and how Ron was going to do this and Ron was going to do that and making it possible through the CIA. We've got an echo happening here.
I think it's me. I'm gonna let me put my headphones on here, Terry. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. Anyway. I'm trying to get Bill Ryan to come on the show here. It looks like he will come on. So if you are able to add Bill Ryan.
And Jason, okay. Let me thank you again for allowing us to extend longer. I do
Oh, no problem. Hey, and it's great to hear an all-cast show. I mean, gosh.
I think that people would like to hear, because Bill obviously did the infamous Camelot interview with me, with Gordon, and we had, you know, many dealings in the early days with Gordon, although I probably had more dealings with him. We certainly had our share of dealings, and I would love to talk to Bill live about the TV show, where people don't know we recorded the television show for True TV that has never been aired. It was a pilot for a show, and Gordon was in the show. He was one of the big stars of the show, in fact, and he made an offer, supposedly an offer that they shouldn't refuse. Whether they could refuse or not, I don't know, but they did, I think. Ultimately, and probably why the show, partly why the show isn't airing to this day, is because the CIA, through Gordon, basically said, if you let us, you know, run the show, that you know, we'll make sure it's a success. And I relayed that message, and Gordon connected him with the producer, and I think he was polite, said thank you, but no thank you. So the show has never hit the air.
Okay, first of all, Jason, I may have to let you go in order to bring on the secondary guest, but thank you again.
Hey, no problem. And if you need any, just roll right through when the hour comes up, and just go ahead and take it, and I'll hang up, and I'll be listening.
Okay, thank you then. And
thank
we
you,
have.
Jason. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello, Jim. It's Paul Richard Price here with Kerry Cassidy, Richard Dolan, and Jerry Pippin. And we wanted to add you to the roundtable discussion.
All righty.
Hi, Jim.
Yeah, Jim,
Hi,
how you doing?
Howdy.
This is Jerry Pippin here. I guess you know about Gordon Novell. He passed away at 3 a.m. yesterday.
Right. Yeah.
And so we're just kind of kicking things around.
Well, he hasn't been in the best of health lately, and he frankly didn't take very good care of himself, so it's terrible. And I'm saddened by that, of course, but at least for me, it didn't come as some sudden, shocking surprise.
And hello, everyone. We're going to be doing an extended Paul Richard Price show today with our guest in our roundtable discussion on the death of Gordon Novell, with Kerry Cassidy, Richard Dolan, Bill Ryan, Jerry Pippin, and Jim Mars. And Jim, thank you again for joining us on this roundtable discussion today. And I want to get you on air talking about your thoughts about the situation
about Gordon, yeah.
Gordon Novell, your knowledge of him, your, you know, just your recollections.
Well, Gordon and I, need to say, didn't always see eye to eye on a lot of things, and particularly the Jim Garrison prosecution in New Orleans that will play Shaw in connection with the Kennedy assassination. But what I'm going to always remember Gordon about was his more recent attempt to bring essentially free energy and also hyperspace drive to the public. And it was a huge mountain he was trying to climb to try to get funding for technology that, you know, most people say does not exist. What he did was, and it's really extraordinary, was that he, when he had the time, he devoted himself to studying the scientific literature as well as the public literature about UFOs, and he felt like he had finally determined how they operate. And it comes down to a gravitic drive. Paul, you're pretty familiar with this too, and I know there's a lot of questions about it, but I'll throw the question back to you. Don't you think that in general he was kind of on to something there?
Well, I've been writing papers on the subject for a while, and I've done over 21 years research.